We heard a selection of English country dances from the players David Douglas, violin, Paul Odette Theorbo, and Andrew Lawrence King on different styles of harps. That was a tune, let's see, called the a set called Cockle Shells. And then before that, a much more familiar tune called Green Sleeves. And that sort of ties in a cheesy way to my conversation now with editor of Encore magazine, Marie Lee. And on the cover this month, Marie, is Cannabis Country. Pot cultivation is budding in Southwest Michigan. It's a big story and one that is still very much in play. Nothing is totally set in stone right now with this growing industry. So it's a really important story to look at. I'm really glad to talk to you about it.
Oh, thank you, Kara. Yeah, I loved your segue. That was pretty funny.
Green sleeves.
Green sleeves and something else green. You're right.
Yeah, this from a time when you weren't even supposed to admit or openly talk about using marijuana. Now we are in a fully legal situation and all kinds of people are growing marijuana. However, I did notice that two of the storytellers or two of the main people that your writer, Chris Killian, gets stories from are using aliases.
Yes. I mean, security is still a huge issue. One of the things that Chris found when he started exploring the story is that there's still a very thriving illicit market for marijuana. And so the farmers that are growing it deal with a lot of theft. And so they're very careful about showing who they are and showing where they are because, you know, especially for the smaller growers, like the person we call Bonnie and the man we call Justin, you know, their grows are 72 plants and they could easily be wiped out with one theft. And so when we decided to do the story, we agreed to give them, you know, change their name mostly for security's sake.
Bonnie is a small grower who really found her passion when she started growing marijuana plants. And I love that she thinks of it as a community and that all these farmers they think they know the right way to grow the perfect plant. But she does say, you know, we learn together how to do this.
Right. Yeah. I think what's interesting about Bonnie is that she is mostly a medical marijuana grower. Mostly. I think she is totally a medical marijuana grower. So she only does grow 72 plants. And she is refining her processes all the time. And I think she and other growers, you know, they share what they've learned about the soils, because so many of them are growing this in Van Buren County. Van Buren County somehow has become the Emerald Triangle for marijuana cultivation in Michigan. And so they share a lot of, you know, discussion about best soil, you know, best practices and things like that. And so with the three big commercial operations that are going to be coming in to Van Buren, you know, that are all going to be capable of growing about 30,000 plants, it'll be interesting to see if that changes that community makeup mm-hmm. or, you know, if they all stay as same as the tight-knit group that they are.
One of the reasons Van Buren County is seeing so much production is that it's already zoned for agriculture. So there's not a whole lot of changes to be made in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Van Buren County and this corner of Michigan is just, it's got ideal growing conditions for a lot of agriculture. You know, we see it with our orchards and the blueberries. And so it's not a huge surprise that it has ideal growing conditions and soil for marijuana as well. And you're right, because most of the property in Van Buren is agricultural. The people that want to have marijuana growing operations do not have to jump through a lot of hoops to get their property rezoned. So it makes it easier for them.
You also highlight a person who, like so many, we're growing illegally for years and years and years. It's not really a secret that marijuana has always been available everywhere. And a lot of people just were very, very careful. And one of the subjects of the story is a man who was very, very careful for a long time. And I'm not sure, is he continuing to do the same kind of growing?
No, he is definitely doing legit medical marijuana growing now. He does not have a big operation. I think what was interesting about Chris's choice to talk to Justin was because he went from illegal and, you know, to a legal operation. And, you know, I absolutely love the story where he describes having to run behind a combine to get his plants before the combine cut them down because he'd been growing them growing them covertly in a cornfield, which is, you know, probably not that uncommon. So I think it's probably a lot easier on him now to have the legal grow operation that he has, because he probably doesn't have to run behind combines and hide. But he does have his fingers, I think, still in the illegal market, because when I say that, I mean that he knows a lot about it still, because he, you know, informed Chris about how, you know, what the marijuana is going for on the legal market versus the legal market. And so, yeah, I think he's still pretty informed on the whole black market situation, even though he's growing it legally.
Should we be shocked that the black market is still enormous for this product?
I was surprised by that. So maybe that was one of the things that Chris wanted to explore a little bit more. And we just found that it wasn't the safest route to go. But yeah, I think it is shocking that, you know, with legal marijuana in Michigan, with the there are so many dispensaries where you can pick it up.
Right.
If people are still preferring to buy it on the black market. And I don't think it's necessarily a price issue. I think it's more just about quality, and, you know, it's not as regulated. And so people have it in their mind that maybe it's better to get it on the black market.
From possibly trusted dealers they've had, perhaps. But it is amazing that, you know, we've got two or three friendly neighborhood dispensaries within a mile or two where we live, and it has changed so much so quickly. How long did Chris work on this cover story for Encore magazine?
He started last summer. Now Chris is pretty well versed in the pop culture. He wrote a story for us in February of 2019. About Marty Chilcutt, who's the father of legal pot. It was Marty Chilcutt who crusaded to get pot legalized in Colorado and then in Michigan. And so he won a Michigan Press Association Award for that story. And so he already knows the landscape pretty well. Chris does. And so last summer he started talking to me about, you know, I think it's fascinating that if you drive around Van Buren County and you know what to look for, there's so much pot growing there and I want to find out why. And it was like, okay. So he started last summer and we wrapped it up about a month ago.
It does.
Just around harvest time.
He did uncover the amazing fact that Michigan is the third largest market in the country now for cannabis. And Van Buren County, surprisingly attractive to growers, small and large. Are there implications of huge operations coming in to Southwest Michigan and starting production?
I'm sure there are definitely, you know, I mean, Chris didn't look as hard at that. I think that there's obviously going to be implications. I think that, you know, there's always environmental concerns when bigger grow operations, land in areas. A lot of people are like, they don't like the smell of marijuana farms. It's very, very pungent.
Yeah.
And so I think that there are some considerations there. I think it's interesting, though, that the large scale operations are both indoor and outdoor grow. So they're basically year round. And if you ever drive by one of those places, they're even their outdoor fields are fenced heavily, and they've got barbed wire, you know, and it's pretty amazing. So I think there's, you know, I don't even know what all the implications are. I'm sure law enforcement, environmental experts could tell us that there's a number of them.
It seems like 2-3 years from now, an update will be fascinating, and there may be some unpredictable things happening in the next few years, and hopefully Chris will be up for another feature.
Well, you know, I think it really is kind of like the Wild West, because it is regulated. I mean, that is the one thing that we have to our advantage, but it is you know, I'm very curious to see where we are in 10 years, because when Oregon legalized marijuana, they went through a very similar growth spurt where there were, you know, there were dispensaries everywhere, and, you know, it was just the crop to be grown, but it's really settled down. I mean, I think, you know, people, it's like the Wild West, it's like a gold rush in a way, and it'll be interesting to see who outlasts, you know, the small growers or the big growers, you know, and what it does to the makeup of the community.
If you just tuned in, my guest is Marie Lee, the editor of Encore Magazine. We're discussing the cover feature, Cannabis Production in West Michigan, written by Chris Killian, an award-winning reporter, in both in radio and in print. So we'll move on now to other features in the magazine, starting with Five Faves. Turns out there is a brewery museum I didn't know about called the Cone Top Brewery Museum, and your writer Chris Moore found some really fascinating what are called artifacts of Breweriana.
Yeah, that's
for Encore.
Yeah. Well, actually, Chris Moore is the owner of all of these artifacts. Chris Moore is a native of Vicksburg, and he is owns Paper City Development, which bought the paper mill that has been empty forever in Vicksburg, and is redeveloping it into a huge development that's going to have 2 museums in it, and one of them is going to be the Cone Top Brewery Museum. And so the museum isn't up and running yet, but these are some of the artifacts that they're going to be putting in that museum.
Well, I don't feel so bad about not knowing about it.
Don't. Not quite there yet.
So he's been collecting artifacts from breweries for a long time, and I imagine that's quite a broad area of interest and collectibles, from signs to, cans or bottles themselves. Is that what his focus is?
Oh, yeah. He owns Old Stove Brewing in Seattle. And I think having grown up here, you know, in the shadow of Bell's Brewery, he was just fascinated by the whole, you know, brewery movement. And some of the things that he found are, you know, like when we asked him to pick his 5 favorite artifacts, I would never have guessed some of these. You know, I was thinking like he was like, oh, some, you know, old beer bottle that's got a label on it's worth like $1 billion. But no, it's pretty pedestrian kind of stuff. A lot of it is the advertising or promotional materials that the breweries put out, like a tray that the server would carry the beers to the table on. And then I think my personal favorite are the bullet lights. I think those things are fascinating and just really cool.
They're shaped kind of like a long oval. I suppose that's why they're called mm-hmm. bullet lights. And they all illuminate a bottle of one brand or another.
Right. And I think what's fascinating is all of those images had to be painted in reverse. And so whoever the artists are, they're very talented to be able to paint, you know, words and things like that backwards. I wouldn't be able to do that. You know, I'd screw it up for sure.
Pictures of these old collectibles are in the new issue of Encore magazine for November. And as we move on, there's a whole lot of first things to look at, some things you've highlighted as great activities, concerts, and things like that. And following that, a profile of a woman who started a company that has an angle I've never heard of before, sleepover party events. called Sweet Dreams.
And right, specialized sleepovers. Right, absolutely.
So
you were going to say, oh, go ahead.
So tell me what Maggie Drew, your writer, your intern actually, learned about why someone would set up a company like this saying, I can assist you with a really fun sleepover, either for kids or for adults.
Well, you know, I think that sleepovers are really kind of the realm of the birthday parties, at least for kids. And then for adults, it's just, you know, she has done things like bridal showers and bachelorette parties, which aren't your traditional bachelorette party. But what was interesting about it is she said, you know, especially in the market for children's sleepovers, that parents are really super busy. And if you're going to have a sleepover party for your child and you want to make it special, you know, she brings all the things you need, and you don't have to worry about doing any of the work. So, you know, it's from those special little tiki beds that they have, which are just beautiful and just make you feel all cozy, to food, and she does all the setup, and then the next day she comes and does all the cleanup. And so if you've ever had a sleepover party, or if you remember having them as kids, usually your parents were more exhausted after the party than you were, because, you know, you came in, it was like a whirlwind of children, and then they left, and there was this huge mess, and your poor parents had to pick it up. So I think it was she found the idea when she was looking for something unique to do for her own child, and thought, wow, I bet this is something, you know, that people here would like or could use. And she found that they did. She's been very successful.
That's amazing to me. Also, not a story that, I mean, she couldn't have been operating this a year ago during the pandemic, because you couldn't have themed sleepovers. It was not a carefree time with everyone in their pods.
Exactly. I think she actually started the business before the pandemic. And then, you know, as things have loosened up and opened back up again, she's finding that, you know, people are ready to come back and have these kind of parties. Now, one thing she'll tell you is they're not giant parties. A lot of times, you know, the biggest group I think she's done for kids is about 8 or 9, you know. And, I mean, I don't really remember sleepovers when I was a kid having, you know, that many kids. But maybe they did. I don't remember. But I think so. She knows. So it's. They're still pretty small and intimate events, you know, but I would say that now that people are feeling a little more secure about gathering and not having to social distance as strongly, that, she's finding herself more busy.
If you're just tuning in now, my guest is the editor of Encore magazine, Marie Lee, and intern Maggie Drew has a couple of stories in the November issue. The next one I'm struggling with, because I'm so hungry right now, and these pictures are making it hard to talk. They're so delicious looking. It's about charcuterie, where it's just a simple way of serving food, but it can look so amazing, to putting all of these ingredients on one platter.
Right. It has become an artistic, it's an artistic endeavor now. And when Maggie first approached me about doing this story, it was because she and some of her friends at college had been experimenting making charcuterie boards. And I was like, why? And she's like, oh my gosh, they're just so beautiful. And she showed me pictures. And I was like, this is a thing. I mean, long gone are the meat and cheese platters that you and I know from the past. I mean, this has to be something beautiful. And not only is it artistic, but it's like very much about how they pair the food. And if you look at, you know, of course, Brian Powers' pictures are absolutely stunning. And that's why you're so hungry. But when you look at the things that this young couple that have opened the Grazing Table downtown Kalamazoo, which is a charcuterie restaurant, are pairing and putting on their boards, it's like, wow, that is a lot more than just meat and cheese. I mean, we've got fruits and vegetables and nuts and, you know, all sorts of cheeses. I mean, it's just beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. I don't know what they look like when people are done eating them. I would assume the boards are totally empty, but they sure start out gorgeous.
Whatever's left is the thing that appealed the least, so leave it off next time.
That's exactly right.
I look at this right now, and I'm like, I don't think I could share. It's intended to share. No, I want that whole thing to myself.
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting about the whole charcuterie craze because, well, no, for one thing, I will say the best thing about this is this story is after editing it, now I know that I will never spell that word wrong again because it's a bit tricky, charcuterie. But, you know, there's also another restaurant in Kalamazoo, the 600 Kitchen and Bar, and they have a charcuterie breakfast board, which is pancakes. So there, you know, there really is no, there are no boundaries. You can pretty much put anything on a charcuterie board. It's all how you present it.
Thanksgiving's coming up, the holidays coming up. So well placed, I would say, Marie.
Well, you know, you kind of wonder with the cover story about, I think Chris is the one that pointed this out to me when we were talking about when we were on the story. And he said, what are the other stories in the issue? And I said, oh, I think we're going to be doing charcuterie and sleepovers. And he just sort of looked at me and I said, those all go together, though, don't they? Hot charcuterie and sleepovers.
They so, do now.
It wasn't by design.
Well, Marie, let's finish with what to me is a really exciting part of the magazine now, and that is the expanded arts section for all of us who are antsy and need some ideas. Here they are, six whole pages of events covering art exhibitions, dance, comedy, so much more, and it's all right in the new Encore magazine, and it's also a new feature. As we talked about it last month, but this is only the second time that you've published an expanded arts section, and it's in cooperation. You had assistance from the Arts Council of Greater Kalamazoo to accomplish this.
Right. I think it's something that the Arts Council really felt strongly that was needed, and that was to help the arts organizations and artists as they emerge from the pandemic get the word out that they're back. And so by expanding the section and having more information about all the things that are going on, we hope that that's what we're doing. I will tell you, November is packed. You cannot be bored in November if you like art.
That's right.
No way.
The first two pages are simply what all of the theater companies in the area are doing. And it almost looks like, you know, you should start a checklist if you want to see if you can finish the arts section of Encore Magazine. You put a little box and check them all off. There's Kalamazoo.
Oh my gosh, what a great idea.
Farmer's Alley, Kalamazoo College, Face Off Theater, Western, Kalamazoo Civic. It's all there. Next page looks like musical events of a great variety, from free offerings at the Kalamazoo Public Library to Dalton Center Recital Hall, visiting artists, St. Lawrence String Quartet from Fontana. And yeah, lots to choose from.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when you just look at that page, those two pages together, like you said, it's just such a wide variety, but it is amazing to me that if there's anything that you're ever curious about, like, you know, I don't even know how to say it. You might know how to say it. Is it berimbau, the bow music, the string bow music from Brazil?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's something that's totally different. Yet, you know, you have the Gilmore Piano Fest Rising Star series, which brings in these amazing young pianists, to somebody that we all, not all of us, but most of us knew and loved as Luke Duke on the
Dukes of Hazzard,
doing a concert at the Barn Theater. He's a longtime Barney. And so it's like you have, I mean, and it's amazing because the four women vocal group, I think it's Sage,
yes.
They are like this vocal, you know, super group. That's what they talk. They talk about how these women are also, all four of them are so individually talented, and they come together and it's just magic. Anyway, when you look at all that, you cannot, you can experience any kind of music in Kalamazoo that you want to experience. It is just phenomenal. I really boggles my mind how fortunate we are in this town.
May I also say, in a personal interest area, I I do have interviews scheduled with a number of the highlighted events, arts events. Sage will be my guest on Thursday, and I'm hoping to schedule interviews with the St. Lawrence String Quartet and the Gilmore Young Rising Star, Federico Coldi, and all that coming up on WMUK's Let's Hear It here on Classical WMUK. And yeah, it's really kind of fun to be shining lights on this aspect of our wonderful community here. And it continues with visual arts, dance. It looks like the ballet coming to the State Theater. I would have assumed Miller.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, too. The State Theater has definitely expanded their offerings as well. I think they go in a lot of interesting directions. You know, this month it's the State Ballet on their, this is just one of many performances there, but it's the State Ballet of Ukraine. Last month it was Mystery Science Theater 3000, you know, and these are just, it's interesting to see, and as Miller is vamping back up, they're getting, a whole wonderful schedule together for the next coming month and year. And it's kind of interesting to see, I think there's a lot of performers out there and a lot of tours that are very, very eager to get back on stage. And so it has made it for these venues like the State Theater and Miller, they just have so much to choose from. So it's very interesting to see what makes it to which stage.
Marie, thank you for spending time with me yet again to go over how the issue came together and how it looks, and also what information we all get to learn by picking up Encore. Would you tell our listeners again how to find their own copy?
All right, I certainly will. So Encore is available in locations across the community, as well as you can view it online at EncoreKalamazoo.com, and you can also subscribe and get it sent to your lovely home, so you don't have to go out looking for a copy at one of our public distribution points. And you can do that online as well.
After a snowy and slippery morning, yeah, that's quite a nice feature, I'd say. Well, all the best of luck to you in preparing for the December issue. Thank you very much, Marie.
Oh, thank you so much, Kara. Always a pleasure.
Here is music of Peter Maxwell Davis, an exuberant overture he wrote called the Ojai Festival Overture. And we will continue with music. Your Encore magazine is available at EncoreKalamazoo.com.